Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks. Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, Lisa, late start. 12:37 in the morning. This is the WGN Radio Theater. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl. We didn't have a special three-hour show tonight,
no.
But we will have an hour-and-a-half show tonight. So
right. We'll be here till 2 a.m.
At which point, we will turn the clocks back, and Dave Pleyer will be on from 1 until 5. So it's confusing this
morning. Very confusing. Hey, you know what? We have a special guest in the studio. Your Auntie Joyce is here.
Auntie Joyce is back.
From Los Angeles. And she flew here. Her arms must be really, really tired.
There you go. There's Carl's joke of the night. So now we've got it out of the way.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
All right. Well, we have 3 episodes of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. And it's a 1955 story. Now, this was told in a 5-part story. When Johnny Dollar moved to the 1950s, it went from a 30-minute show to 5 15-minute shows Monday through Friday. These were tremendous stories. Bob Bailey played Johnny Dollar. And we have a 5-part story, 3 episodes tonight. 2 episodes
tonight.
Tomorrow night. Oh, yeah, tonight, I guess.
Tonight,
you're right.
This morning, tonight. We will get through all 5, so we will complete our Yours Truly Johnny Dollar marathon.
And we'll also play an episode of Boston Blackie when we come back here tonight. All right, so let's get into this, unless we have to do a spot. Do we have to do spots? No, we're going to start.
Nope,
we're going to start chapter 1 of this 5-part adventure called The Lansing Fraud Matter. This first episode is from December 12, 1955, and Johnny Dollar investigates the death of a man with a $50,000 insurance policy who died from malnutrition. How is that possible if he had $50,000 coming to him? We'll find out. Here's part 1 now of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Hi, kiddo. Carter at Universal Adjustment.
Jim, how are you?
In a rush. I have to catch a plane to Tucson, Arizona.
Lucky you. Nice there this time of year.
No, listen. One of our brokers out there wrote a 50,000 straight life policy on a man named James Lansing. Lansing dropped dead 2 days ago.
Uh-huh.
And you'll never guess why.
I'll bite. Why?
Mr. Lansing starved to death.
What? With a 50,000?
Honest. He died of malnutrition. Got the coroner's report from Tucson right in my hand.
Well, if a man could buy a $50,000 policy, he ought to be able to buy himself a square meal.
Yeah. Johnny, flight 203 leaves at 10:45. You interested?
See you at the airport, Jim.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account, submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Lansing fraud. Expense account item 1, $178.13. Cost of plane ticket, Hartford to Tucson. I shaved, showered, packed, and got out to the airport in time to have breakfast there. Jim Carter found me at the cashier's gate.
Hey, kiddo, you won't need a coat out there in that desert country.
As usual, Jim Carter was bigger than I thought. A man who stands 6'5" always is. A little ruddier, a little more blustery, but as efficient as ever.
I wrote a special delivery airmail to the insurance commission in Arizona this morning and explained that worldwide, they wrote the policy, we're holding up payment pending investigation.
Well, you got to tell them that in person. We'll be out there as soon as the letter.
Well, I like to be formal on these things, especially with the state commission. Besides, I'd just as soon let him think we'll get around to a routine investigation later in a week or two.
In other words, you didn't tell anybody we're coming.
No, I didn't. Maybe we can work it better this way.
Come on, lady, put it back.
The faster we move in and find out what's what and aren't bothered by anybody, the better off we'll be. Hey, give me your ticket, will you, Jim?
Yeah, sure.
Here you are, pal.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Johnny, that commission is going to get formal sooner or later and ask a lot of questions.
Please.
Mainly, why doesn't Worldwide honor the claim and pay off the beneficiary? So we'll have to skedaddle and get ourselves some good answers for him.
Yeah, sir. Hey. You may board the plane.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, pal.
Has anybody asked that question yet?
Well, the beneficiary, sure. James Lansing's sister, named Arlene Kennedy. She called the broker, and he referred her to claims division at Worldwide, and she called them long distance, and then they called me. I told him to put her off for a while, telling her it was just routine.
I see. She gonna be tough?
Yeah, she could be, Johnny. I understand she has money of her own, and she has some influence in and around Tucson.
Oh, a lot of money?
Yeah, and trust. She's very comfortably fixed. Yeah, watch yourself, kiddo. This Mrs. Kennedy's pretty upset by the whole business. Can't blame her for that. James Lansing died on the street with no identification on him. By the time police found out who he was, a routine PM had already been performed to determine cause. You know, the county was going to bury this guy?
With $50,000 worth of insurance?
Yeah, imagine that. Oh, excuse me, lady. Yeah, the post-mortem never had happened unless Lansing dropped dead on a public street.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Well, I requested the coroner's office in Tucson to hold the body until we can get something done.
Better fix your seatbelt, Jim.
Oh, yeah. First thing that occurred to me when I saw the PM findings was that it might not be James Lansing at all. Chronic heart condition, lung history, debility.
Doesn't sound like anybody Worldwide would insure. Lansing took a physical before the policy was issued, didn't he?
Of course he did.
Say, have you got any material on his insurance examination?
Sure. Right here. Standard form. James Lansing was 100% okay when the policy was issued a couple of years ago.
Malnutrition, lung history, chronic heart. Hey, how could he get in that bad shape in 2 years?
That's a pretty good question, Johnny. I bet the answer is going to be great.
Yeah. What's the examining physician's name?
Dr. Carl Mayhood, Suite 932, Valley National Building, Tucson. He's our first job, Johnny. Hey, cute stewardess.
Yeah?
Well, back to business, kiddo.
It was a long trip, and I spent most of it going over the material in Jim Carter's briefcase. By the time we circled Tucson Airport at 4:45 in the afternoon, I had the facts pretty well in mind. Expense account item 2, $350, cabfare, Tucson Airport to the Pioneer Hotel. Jim Carter and I took adjoining rooms. I unpacked my clothes and got on the phone. A Sergeant Younger, Tucson Police, had made the DOA report on James Lansing. Yes, he was in. Yes, he'd be glad to talk to me. I left Jim Carter contacting the state medical board.
Glad to meet you, Mr. Dollar. How do you like Tucson?
Well, I've been here 2 hours, Sergeant. Weather's certainly nice.
Well, like this all through the winter months. It's a little warm in the summer, though. Yes, sir. This Lansing matter.
Yeah.
Isn't really much to tell you, Mr. Dollar. One of the cars answered the call. A man was found dead in the doorway of a jewelry store about 4 blocks down the street.
Uh-huh. This was day before yesterday, Sergeant?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I went down to the scene and called the coroner's office. No identification on him, so we started to check him out. Took a little while. By the time we got a make on him, the coroner had already performed an autopsy.
Yeah, I understood that was about the way it was. Say, tell me, how did you identify him as Lansing?
One of his prints matched up on our cards here. Lansing was booked on a traffic beef a year ago. Otherwise, we'd still be trying to make him.
You're sure it's Lansing over in the morgue?
Yeah, we're sure. His sister came down, identified him. Name of Kennedy.
Yes. Well, what did Mrs. Kennedy have to say about the cause of death?
Nothing.
That malnutrition bit didn't do a thing for her, huh?
Not a thing, no, sir. We all thought Lansing was some sort of a transient. You know, just some old bum until we identified him.
Uh-huh. Any witnesses see him die?
No, haven't found any. According to the coroner, he'd been dead an hour or so before anybody noticed him at all. Happened early in the morning.
I see.
Say, did Lansing have any other business down here other than that traffic violation?
Nope.
All right. Who do I have to see to get into the morgue?
Well, I'll phone the coroner for you. Won't be any trouble there. You want to go over now?
No, later on, maybe.
Dollar.
Yeah?
Death was from natural causes. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Then no matter how much you investigate, you people are going to have to pay off. Well, aren't you?
Maybe. We just have to be sure of one thing.
What's that?
That we insured the right man. By the time I finished with Sergeant Younger, it was 6 o'clock. I phoned the hotel, and Jim Carter, busy and efficient as always, had already gotten the vital statistics on Dr. Carl Mayhood. Northwestern University Medical School, 1940. Army Medical Corps, 1941 to 45. Dr. Mayhood's license to practice medicine in Arizona was issued in June of 1946. Married, 2 children, income and practice, according to Carter, was average. In person, Dr. Mayhood was a tall, blonde man in his late 30s. He looked like he needed a week's rest and a few laughs.
Day and night. You have an alarm clock around the house, Mrs. Garland? Well, use that. Yes. Goodbye. Yes, sir?
Dr. Mayhood, my name's Johnny Dollar. I'm from Hartford. I represent the Adjustment Bureau handling a claim for worldwide insurance.
Well, what does that mean?
I'm an investigator.
So?
July 14th, 1953, you examined a man I'd like to get some information about.
I hope this won't take too long. Was it an insurance examination?
Yeah. The man's name was James Lansing. Do you happen to remember him?
James Lansing. No, I can't say that I do remember him, Mr. Dollar. What about him?
Well, I'd like to show you the standard examination form first. Is this your signature? Is that your signature, Doctor?
I suppose so, yes. I don't know.
Aren't you sure?
Well, how many people are certain of their signatures? It looks like my signature, Mr. Dollar. I can't say for sure if it is or isn't.
All right, what about these? Are these notations on the form in your handwriting?
I would think so. I don't know. It looks like my handwriting. I can't say.
According to this form, you gave Mr. Lansing a complete physical and pronounced him sound.
That's my job as a doctor on these insurance examinations. Anything unusual about that?
Mr. Lansing died 2 days ago, Doctor.
There's nothing unusual about that either. Did they send you all the way from Hartford so I could tell you to go back there and buy a book on heart disease? You can get them anywhere in the country. The simplest kind. Not even a doctor's book. Read it. Know it. And don't take up my valuable time. Now, let me have that.
Sure.
This patient Lansing was 41 years old. If he had no heart condition when I examined him 2 years ago, and obviously he didn't, according to my findings, it's entirely reasonable to assume that he could have developed heart trouble in a very short while, even the day after I examined him. You people gauge those things in your premiums. Why do you bother me?
Are you finished?
Huh?
I take it you've had yourself a tough day, Doctor, and you don't want to be bothered with anybody. Now, look, I'm not here to bother you. Just from what's on this sheet and what's happened, you're in enough trouble to get yourself involved in a police investigation. I'm here to try to avoid all that, for you as well as me. And please, don't lecture me on heart trouble, incidentally. We know the statistics by age, race, color, climate, state, religion, occupation, geographical area, and sex. It so happens we don't have to go into that, Doctor. James Lansing died of malnutrition.
Hmm?
I said Lansing died of malnutrition.
I'll be doggone.
Coroner's report. Look for yourself.
Well, he should know.
Now, was it possible for you to overlook that condition at the time you examined Lansing?
If he'd been suffering from malnutrition in any degree, I would have discovered it and noted it.
According to the coroner's findings, James Lansing had been ill several years. The lung and heart condition existed at least 10 years. Can you explain how you were able to pronounce him physically fit, Doctor?
No, I can't.
Well, how about this, the angina condition?
I could have missed that, but it's unlikely with the degree of aggravation noted here on the coroner's report.
Have you had much experience reading chest x-rays, Doctor?
Of course.
The lesions reported by the coroner.
If there'd been any lesions on Lansing's chest, I would have reported them. I can't explain that either.
Well, now you understand why I'm here.
Certainly. I wish I could help you.
You can. Just let me see your file copy of the examination.
And the x-ray you took at that time.
I'll have my nurse look them up. I don't keep files over a year old up here. We have a place down in the basement.
Okay.
I'll have them for you tomorrow.
What time tomorrow?
As soon as possible.
I'd like to have them first thing, Doctor.
You're kind of on me, aren't you?
That's right, Doctor. I'm kind of on you.
There'll be another intriguing episode in our story of the Lansing fraud tomorrow.
Tomorrow, $50,000 is a good price for a killing. Most anybody will listen for that kind of money. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure and join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
There you have it. That's part one of a five-part story on Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, called The Lansing Fraud Matter. That stars Bob Bailey as Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, with Roy Rowan announcing. It's heard on CBS going back to December 12th, 1955. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Coming up in about 5 minutes, it'll be 1 a.m. We'll have news, and then we will play two more chapters of this Lansing fraud matter on Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, with Bob Bailey. It's a Johnny Dollar marathon, Lisa.
We thought that was a great idea, and apparently our listeners agree.
Oh, yeah. People like Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
And the thing is, when they don't like it, we hear about that, too. So we do appreciate the comments. We want to give you what you want.
Well, we also have Boston Blackie, yeah, which is one of my favorite radio shows of all time. Boston Blackie with Dick Kalmar. And I think our fun fact is about Dick Kalmar and his wife, Dorothy Kilgallen.
It sure is. You can check it out on our Facebook page, WGN Radio Theater.
Yeah, and I remember watching What's My Line.
Yes.
She was one of the panelists on there for many years, and she was a investigative reporter, and she was going to blow the lid off the Kennedy assassination. She had interviewed Jack Ruby twice when he was in jail. Now, of course, Jack Ruby is who shot and killed Lee Harvey Oswald. And she interviewed him twice, and she's like, I'm going to blow the lid off the Kennedy assassination. And guess what? Within days, she went bye-bye. She had a very mysterious death. And so it's all on our fun fact, even though it's not, that's not so fun.
No, it's not fun, but it's
but
a fact.
It's a fact. So check it out. Yeah. Hey, you know, we have a club, and we've been talking about this for a few months, the Classic Radio Club. Folks, if you haven't joined the Classic Radio Club, I do urge you to check out the website. Just go to classicradioclub.com. Because if you join, you're going to get sent CDs of the greatest classic radio shows of all time that I'm going to hand select every single month and send you CDs of 10 of the best shows from my library of over 100,000 shows, plus liner notes. And Lisa, you just got your third collection in the mail.
I did. I got my next installment. It came to my doorstep. And what's very exciting, Sian, CD number 4
yeah,
has my favorite husband.
Yeah.
Wow. Personal favorite. Some of the shows with this monthly Classic Radio Club are The Aldrich Family, Box 13, Dragnet, The Great Gildersleeve, Gunsmoke, My Favorite Husband, Our Miss Brooks, Suspense, X-1. I don't see how you could do any better than that. What a variety of shows as well.
Yeah, and they're all in a collector case, 5 CDs, 10 shows, and you get liner notes as well. It's sent right to your home. It's a surprise every single month. You never know what you're going to get. I'm going to pick great shows for
it's
you.
It's
like
a box of chocolates.
Yeah.
And so just go to the website, check
it's
it out.
It's even better than chocolate.
Well,
chocolate's
okay.
Fattening. These shows are
true.
Not fattening.
That's true.
So go to Classic Radio
You could
Club.
Actually have them together. You could have chocolate and some classic radio shows. That's a good combination.
You know what? I think you're right. Have a cup of coffee, some chocolate, read the liner notes that I wrote, and
sit
listen
back
to the
and
shows.
Enjoy.
Wow. Nothing
right?
like that. Hey, you know who's going to be here tomorrow night to give away another year's?
Tonight.
Yeah,
tonight.
That's right.
Tonight.
Yeah. Gosh.
So sorry.
Yeah.
We have Cat's Pride's
yeah.
monthly drawing
Dan
tonight.
Jaffe will be here along with Dave Weiske, and they will give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. Now, folks, you still have time to get in a picture of your kitty cat
Hurry
and
up.
Be entered in to possibly win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. How do they do that, Lisa?
They send a picture of their cat to catspridephoto@gmail.com.
Everybody that has a cat has a picture of their cat.
See,
I'm
now I was
sure.
trying to tell them what to do, but you didn't let me finish.
That's part of my job.
I know.
To interrupt you.
So what do we do now? Should I try
I don't know.
Again?
What do we do?
So you still have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for it to
I'm
interrupt
listening.
Me. Send it a picture for Cat. If I talk really fast, maybe I'll get it in.
No, don't say it too fast.
catspridephoto@gmail.com. They will be here tonight at 11 o'clock p.m., and that's when the drawing is, so get it in right away.
Yeah.
Make sure to include your name, your cat's name, your city, and your state.
All right. Make sure you do that. Be entered. You might be, I mean, somebody wins every
yeah,
single
that's
month.
A
could
great
be you.
Prize.
All right. It is 1 o'clock in the morning. Time for the news. When we come back from the news, two more episodes of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Don't miss that.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger Badish. It is 7 minutes after 1 o'clock in the morning. We'll be here till 2 a.m. And in this hour, we will play two quarter-hour chapters of the Lansing Fraud Matter, starring Bob Bailey from 1955. But before we do that, we're going to play our oldies but goodies Cat's Pride music.
Those oldies but goodies reminds me of you.
So I know everybody's enjoying Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, five-part story from December of 1955. And a song that was a top hit during that time was called...
What?
I thought you'd know.
1955?
Yep. You don't know.
Probably not.
Yeah, you know, it's called 16 Tons by Tennessee Ernie Ford.
'Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. I picked up my shovel and I walked to the mine. I loaded 16 tons of number 9 coal. And the straw boss said, well, bless my soul, you load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning, it was drizzling rain. Fighting and trouble are my middle name. I was raised in the canebrake by an old mama lion. Can't know a high-toned woman, make me walk the line. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. If you see me coming, better step aside. A lot of men didn't, a lot of men died. One fist of iron, the other of steel. If the right one don't get you, then the left one will. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe
soul to the company store.
Roger lip synced the entire song.
Well, I was going to say,
here.
I hope that you guys enjoyed that as much as we did here in the studio. That's probably impossible, but we're enjoying the music. We hope that you do too. That was 16 Tons by Tennessee Ernie. We'll just do it like
Tennessee
that.
Ernie Ford.
Tennessee Ernie, a couple of things going on. You know what? Open Disneyland opened July 17th of 1955. So that was happening. And a hot new game was
Spinner.
Spinner? What the heck is Spinner?
I don't know.
Roger, what was a hot new game?
What was that game with all the dots on the ground? What was it called? Spinner or something like that?
Twister.
No, yeah. No, what is a hot new board game that just started just at that time? Come on, Roger.
Hot new board game. Operation.
No. A little more intellectual.
It was out before that.
Scrabble.
Scrabble.
Oh, there you go. Scrabble's a great game.
TV show.
That's right.
Roger got all his hairs cut. Look at how...
Roger, very dapper.
Man. Wow. All right. So great job, Lisa Wolf.
Yes, Carl.
Yeah, Lisa's like a DJ over here. She's
kind of like it.
She's going to have her own DJ show.
Well, after listening to Lisa and the DJ show, we'll see if there's any time left for some classic radio.
Yeah. Great job. All right. So Johnny Dollar coming your way. After these words, make sure you check out the Classic Radio Club. Go to classicradioclub.com. Learn all about it. Become a
member.
Yeah, become a member. You're going to like it. All right, it's time for part two of this five-part adventure called The Lansing Fraud. Starring Bob Bailey, here's yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Dr. Mayhood, I sent you a copy of Lansing's insurance examination this morning. Did you get it all right?
Yes, I did, Doctor. Thank you very much. Just looked it over.
And I take it everything's all right.
It's an exact duplicate of the one sent to the insurance company, and that part's okay. But it doesn't straighten out matters on this case.
I'm not concerned with your case particularly. I just hope you're through bothering me, Mr. Dollar.
Not quite.
What does that mean?
I want another hour of your time, Doctor. I want you to go over to the coroner's office with me and look at Mr. Lansing's body.
What for?
To identify it. I've got to know if he's the man you examined or not. About an hour? Doctor, I can get an injunction.
All right.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. Location, Tucson, Arizona. To the Universal Adjustment Bureau Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is a further accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Lansing fraud. Or was it a fraud? Expense account item 3, $10, loan. To Jim Carter, who was working with me on the case.
Thanks, buddy. I'll pay you back as soon as I can cash a check. Been so busy, I haven't had time. How's your doctor, friend?
Well, I'm going to pick him up pretty soon and go over to the coroner's office. I want him to look at James Lansing and see if he's the same man he passed on the insurance examination 2 years ago. Either we insured the wrong man or Dr. Mayhood examined the wrong man. I don't know which. How have you done so far?
Well, besides what I told you yesterday about Dr. Mayhood?
Yeah.
Well, he's in healthy financial shape. Not good or bad, but, you know, healthy. His house halfway paid for, he owns one car outright, and has 8 months to go on another one.
All of which doesn't mean anything if he phonied up an insurance examination.
Yeah, that's true, kiddo, that's true.
You know, I've been thinking. This would have worked, but James Lansing died on the street and the city performed an autopsy. Death, malnutrition. For a private physician, without an autopsy hanging over him, it could have been heart failure or most anything. Jim, I think we can do whatever we want around here. Step on anybody's toes, make any kind of noise we like. With this kind of situation to investigate, we don't have to be careful.
Easy, Johnny.
Lansing's body's in the morgue. There's no doubt that it's him, Exhibit A. But we aren't sure that his $50,000 policy was issued legitimately.
What are you getting to?
Call the State Insurance Commission, Jim. Let them know we think this is a bad one from top to bottom. Let them know that so that when the beneficiary starts to complain, they can tell her.
It might scare her and whoever helped her into being more ridiculous than they've been already.
I'm going to hold off, Johnny.
Why?
Until I see how you and Dr. Mayhood make out at the morgue.
Expense account item 4, $2, cab fare. From my hotel to the Valley National Building. I picked up a scowling Dr. Mayhood, and we drove over to the coroner's office.
Mr. Dollar, this is a waste of your time and mine.
Sorry to inconvenience you, Doctor, but it's necessary.
I suppose so. And I suppose you have a job to do. But I have a job, too. Mr. Franks, the insurance broker, telephones me and says he's sending over a man for a physical. I do the physical. It's immaterial to me whether the man I examine is qualified for insurance or not. My job is to examine him. It's up to the insurance company to determine...
Yeah?
Johnny Dollar, this is Dr. Mayhood. I believe Sergeant Younger phoned.
Yeah, this one.
Dollar, it's up to the insurance company to do what they want to about the examination.
I understand all that, Doctor.
Then don't ignore it with your high-pressure tactics. Because examination is the only part I have to do with this business. I examined a man named James Lansing 2 years ago. You have a copy of my findings on that examination. I stand on them. And don't forget it.
I don't forget for 1 minute. Nor do I forget that what you found and what an autopsy surgeon found are completely different opinions on Lansing's physical condition.
Here we go, boys. There's the body.
Pull the sheet back, please.
Yeah.
Well, Doctor?
I called my lawyer after you called me today. I won't be intimidated, Mr. Dollar.
You aren't being intimidated, Doctor. You're being asked to cooperate.
Then maybe I don't like the way you ask for cooperation. My attorney will be in my office to represent me if you bother me any more about this.
You want to look at this body?
Your attorney can't refute what's already been established, Doctor. You pronounced James Lansing in good physical condition 2 years ago. An autopsy report shows that when he died 2 days ago, he was in very bad physical condition. So bad that 2 years ago he couldn't possibly have gone through a careful examination in your office without some of the symptoms being detected by you.
Where is your medical degree and what responsibility?
Oh, why don't you shut up and take a look and tell me if you've ever seen this man before?
I won't be spoken to that way.
Just a minute. I'll get an injunction and I'll charge malpractice and negligence if I have to.
Oh? On what grounds?
You're being stupid, Doctor. All you have to do is look at that corpse and tell me if he's the man you examined in your office 2 years ago. Well?
I don't know whether I've seen this man before or not.
Well, does he look familiar in any way?
I can't say. I might have examined this man. I don't know.
This is James Lansing, Doctor. The name you filled in on your physical examination for the insurance.
I know that.
Is this the man you examined?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. It was 2 years ago. If I see a man for 3 hours in the course of a physical examination, am I expected to remember his face or any details about him 2 years later?
Is there any way you can determine whether or not this is the man you examine in your office?
No. Not that I know of. Is there any way you can determine it?
Believe me, Doctor, I can try. And I did try. That afternoon, over the protests of Dr. Mayhood, I took all of the personnel connected with his office down to the morgue. A nurse, a receptionist, the x-ray technician, and a laboratory worker. None of them recognized the body of James Lansing. Expense account item 5, 10 cents, one phone call to Jim Carter, who'd spent the day preparing the necessary forms for the insurance commission and gathering data on Lansing's beneficiary.
You think Dr. Mayhood was in on it?
He's too mad, too belligerent, Jim.
You don't sound too sure.
Well, and maybe he just strikes me as an inept doctor. Well, let's say Mayhood's way down on my list. He examined a man who said he was James Lansing. It could have been anybody.
All right, we'll let it go that way for a while. Any ideas?
I'm on my way out to Lansing's old address. He had an apartment on the other side of town. I want to see how he's lived out there.
Still want me to go ahead with the insurance commission?
Yeah, go ahead. The manager at James Lansing's apartment house happened to be a woman named Anita Regan. She also happened to be willing to go back down to the coroner's office with me and view the mortal remains.
There you are.
Oh.
Have you ever seen this man before, Mrs. Regan?
Yes, sir. That's Mr. Lansing, apartment 34.
You're positive?
Oh, yes. I've seen him every day for almost 2 years.
Okay. Want a smoke?
Oh. I want to get out of here.
Oh, sure.
I don't know why I'm acting this way. He doesn't look any different now than he's looked before. I've seen him stretched out like that 100 times.
What?
I mean, almost like that. Out, stony. Only I guess it's because I knew he was just drunk then, not dead.
Oh, I see.
He was crazy carrying on the way he did. Whew. Feels good to be out in the sunlight again.
Yeah.
I'll take that smoke now, Mitch Fowler.
Oh, sure.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Lansing used to get up around 10 every morning. He'd look awful, but he was always kind of nice, polite, you know. He'd be regular as clockwork. He'd walk past my door and tip his hat and go right down to the store and come back in a little while with a sack of groceries, a bottle of milk for his cat, some donuts for himself, and some booze.
Uh-huh.
And then he'd just lock himself up in his apartment and stay there all day, drinking.
Real alcoholic, huh?
Well, I'd say so. At least I wasn't surprised he starved to death. He can't live on whiskey. He was fried to the ears by noon every day, as long as I knew him.
Mr. Lansing didn't work then.
Well, I think he tried to sell real estate once, a long time ago.
Oh?
But how could he? I understand he was a retired engineer or something like that.
He'd pay his rent?
Oh, yes. Always seemed to have enough money to get along.
Did he have any family, Mrs. Regan?
Well, I know he's got a sister living in town somewhere.
What about his friends?
He seemed to do all his drinking alone. Say, you're from the insurance company. You should know about his family.
Apparently, there are a lot of things we don't know.
Hmm?
A man named James Lansing moved into your apartment house 2 years ago. He didn't work, but he had enough money for his rent and his liquor. He also had enough money to buy some expensive insurance. Very expensive. Somehow, he passed an insurance examination, and then he suddenly died. No one, nothing. Just one beneficiary.
Mr. Dollar, you don't suppose somebody just gave him enough money to get along so he'd drink himself to death, do you?
That's one way of looking at it, Mrs. Regan.
Oh, that poor man. That poor, poor man.
I spent another hour with Mrs. Regan gathering as much background as I could about the last 2 years of James Lansing's life. I also spoke to the janitor of the building and two of the tenants. They all verified the fact that Lansing had been drinking heavily for better than 18 months prior to his death. No one seemed to know why. Jim Carter had an answer.
I talked to our man in L.A., Johnny. Lansing lived there before he came to Tucson. He had several arrests for drunkenness, never married. One time he made his living as an engineer. Finally, he got fired for drinking on the job. Yeah, just one of those chronic cases. First arrest was back in 1939.
How's the beneficiary holding on?
The sister?
Yeah.
Well, Mrs. Kennedy was pretty upset when the insurance commission notified her we were in town making an investigation. Indignant, put out, things like that. She wanted to know how long it'd take. This all comes secondhand from the insurance commission. Johnny, a broker named Hillary Franks sold the policy.
What have you got on him?
Hillary Franks has represented Worldwide Insurance in this area for 17 years. You're stalling, kiddo.
Sure I'm stalling, Jim. Because we're right down to the meat of it now, and it makes me sick. There's only one person who stood to benefit by having James Lansing insured. That's the beneficiary, his sister, Arlene Kennedy.
So?
Jim, you know as well as I do, somebody else had to take the physical examination in Dr. Mayhood's office. Someone had to help her arrange that. Someone had to help her get Lansing's signature on the policies. She couldn't have pulled it off by herself without gumming it up. She had to have expert help.
Hillary Franks.
Yeah, Hillary Franks. 17 years, broker, Worldwide Insurance Company.
Okay, the salesman's the first one to come under suspicion in a case like this outside of the beneficiary, so let's get on with it.
All right, Jim. One thing.
What?
Hillary Franks knows we'll be looking at him, and he knows he's under suspicion.
That worry you?
A little bit. After 17 years in the business, he should also know where we're going to be before we get there. If he did something as dumb as try to work a $50,000 fraud on his own insurance company, he might do something even dumber. If so... Well, what's the 38, Jim?
Here. From now on, Johnny, you better carry this.
There'll be another intriguing episode of the Lansing Fraud tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Well, tomorrow there's a bit of excitement when a pair of thieves start a falling out.
Matter of fact, a lot of excitement. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure and join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
There you have it. That's part two of this five-part adventure of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, The Lansing Fraud, starring Bob Bailey. Let's take a break. Then it's more of the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger, and thank you, Bill Curtis. Shante Garth, our producer in the booth, doing a fantastic job as always. And we are about to listen to Chapter 3 of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. I hope everyone's enjoying this. I know we had a lot of people saying they couldn't wait to hear this story. And we have a text in line, folks, if you want to text us, 312-981-7200. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. But right now, let's play part three of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
This is Arlene Kennedy. You called my home, Mr. Dollar?
Oh, yes, Mrs. Kennedy. I'm with Universal Adjustment Bureau. We're investigating the matter of James Lansing's death.
Your what?
We're investigating your brother's death before we take action on your claim as his beneficiary. Under the circumstances, we have to do this, Mrs. Kennedy. I'd like to talk to you about it, if I may.
How would you like to talk to my lawyer, Mr. Dollar?
Sure, if you think it's necessary. I'd rather talk to you first.
Why?
Well, frankly, the insurance company isn't satisfied that this is a legitimate claim.
You mean you're not satisfied?
All right, then I'm not satisfied, and I represent the company in this matter. Look, we won't get anywhere this way, Mrs. Kennedy, if you'll just...
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Tucson, Arizona, to the Universal Adjustment Bureau Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Lansing fraud. $50,000 worth. Expense account continued. Item 6, $10, car rental, to get to Catalina Vista, where Arlene Kennedy maintained a $55,000 home. It was a warm, sunny day, incredibly clear. I enjoyed it in my drive. However, I can't say I enjoyed Arlene Kennedy.
That's as far as you need to come.
What?
You must be the Mr. Dollar I spoke to on the phone. If you didn't get the idea on the phone, I'll tell it to you again. I don't want to talk to you. Now, please get away from my home.
We'll have to talk sometime.
I don't think so.
I know so, Mrs. Kennedy.
I must ask you to take your briefcase and get out of here, Mr. Dollar, now.
I'm sorry you feel that way.
Look, my brother Jim drank himself to death. I don't know why. I just know he did it. He's dead. I'm his beneficiary. Why don't you pay me what you owe me?
We will, Mrs. Kennedy, if the circumstances are right. So far, though, we have reasonable doubt. And this investigation is for your benefit as much as it is ours.
I can hardly believe that.
When we've satisfied ourselves, one way or the other, your claim will be settled.
The whole situation's cut and dry.
I'm afraid it isn't.
Mr. Dollar, I've had enough of this. I'll turn the matter over to my attorneys.
Mrs. Kennedy, I don't carry this briefcase to impress anybody, but I thought it might interest you. I have in it a copy of the physical examination your brother took 2 years ago when he applied for his insurance policy. I have a copy of the coroner's report and the results of the autopsy.
I don't care what you have.
Then maybe you'd just be interested in the conclusion. We have to discredit one item or the other. That's why we can't take any action on your claim yet. Goodbye.
Wait. What is it you want to know? I haven't seen my brother in well over 2 years, 3 years. I can't tell you a thing about him.
Were you on good terms with him?
Of course I was. I was the only one he had in the world. He left me his insurance money, didn't he?
Did he leave you anything else?
He didn't have anything else.
I understand there was a trust in the family.
He spent his a long time ago.
I understand you're a widow, Mrs. Kennedy.
I don't see what bearing that has.
Do you have any dependents?
No children, that's what you mean.
The money from the policy would have gone to you alone.
Let me correct you. The money will come to me alone. I don't know what you people think you can do trying to weasel out of this payment, but I've already spoken with my attorneys, and they've advised me to sue for an immediate settlement and damages.
Perhaps I can save you some fees and your attorney some time, Mrs. Kennedy. Where can I contact them?
Never mind. You'll find out soon enough.
I hope you won't allow them to go so far as a courtroom without speaking to me.
We'll see about that, too. I don't need your advice.
Now, look, I'm going to tell you exactly what I'd tell them. You can pass it on to them. Your brother could have died quietly in his bed one night, and any doctor would have pronounced him a heart failure, and your claim would have been honored without delay. But James Lansing made the mistake of dropping dead on a public street, and the police took over, and before he was properly identified, an autopsy had been performed.
And I intend to sue the city for that kind of liberty. They had no right to...
They had every right. An unknown man dead on the street from unknown causes. Now, don't be childish. Because of that autopsy, we know your brother couldn't possibly have passed an insurance examination 2 years ago or 10 years ago. Not with the amount of bad health he'd collected.
But he did pass it. The insurance company accepted him as a client. They issued a policy, and you can't deny it. Jim came to me the day after he took out that policy and told me I was his beneficiary.
You said you hadn't seen him for well over 2 years. He took the exam a year ago last July.
All right, I saw him that one time.
Look, I'll lay it right on the line, Mrs. Kennedy. We don't think your brother ever took that physical examination.
What?
Someone else went up to Dr. Mayhood's office and took it for him. Someone who could pass it. Mrs. Kennedy, we aren't fools, and we don't like to be fooled. Now, we're going to find out who that someone was and how it was done. We're used to all sorts of tricks in this business and all sorts of bluffing, too. You can sue us for a settlement. You can sue us all over the place. With what I have right now, I'd be willing to meet you in a courtroom. I'm talking facts to you, Mrs. Kennedy, and I wish you'd talk them to me.
Get out of here. Get out of here, you cheap snooper, before I call the police and have you thrown out.
Some more expenses. Item 7, $6, lunch for Jim Carter and myself.
We'll pass the cream, Johnny. Thanks.
Well, what do you think, Jim?
Mrs. Kennedy?
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to say. She's going to make it as tough as she can for us, judging from her attitude toward you this morning.
How does the commission feel?
Well, they feel very badly that something like this has come up. They've requested us to act with discretion and to act swiftly. They're certain the entire matter can be settled without legal action. You pass the sugar, please.
Uh-huh. Are they going to cooperate?
They aren't going to do anything until we show cause. They did mention that their action will take place in 10 days, so that means we've got 10 days to write such a statement.
Tell me what you've learned about Mrs. Kennedy.
Well, she was widowed 5 years ago. Her husband was a lawyer. He left her $40,000 in insurance and $15,000 in debts. Her family, the Lansings, had money at one time. Enough so that she gets one half of 0.1% of an oil company out on the coast. It pays her about $750 a month. She managed to clear her house out in Catalina Vista and drive a Cadillac.
But she could use $50,000.
Of course she could use $50,000. Everybody could. Johnny, when are you going to start on the insurance agent?
Hillary Franks? I've already started. If I know my Mrs. Kennedy, she won't call a lawyer or anybody else right now. She'll talk to her agent, Mr. H. Franks, and he'll have to come to us. I don't have to go to him.
Johnny...
When you buy a radio and it goes bad, you call up the store. They didn't manufacture the set, but you complain to them just the same. Same thing with insurance. You don't call up the company, you call up the agent who sold it to you. Hillary Frank has to call me, Jim, just to look legitimate.
I hope you're right, kiddo.
After lunch, I went back to my hotel room and opened up the file Jim Carter had collected on Hillary Franks. Hillary Franks, age 56, college graduate, married, 2 children, wife deceased, income good. No record of any kind for any offense. Highly thought of by worldwide insurance officials. The 17 years with the company sort of got me. He started as an agent when he was 39.
This is Hillary Franks, Mr. Dollar.
Yes, sir.
I understand you're in town on a little investigation for the home office. Wonder if we could have dinner.
As a matter of fact, I was going to call you, Mr. Franks. The policy I'm working on was written by you.
Yes, I understand that. Mrs. Kennedy, the beneficiary, called me today. Seemed very upset. I thought perhaps we could discuss it over dinner.
Anything wrong with right now at your office?
Why, not a thing.
I suppose you're Mr. Dollar.
Yes.
Maria, that's my secretary. She's already gone for the day. I'm sorry you have to wait so long.
Mr. Hillary Franks looks straight life insurance from the top of his iron gray hair to the tips of his polished brown shoes. He had a quiet manner about him and a pair of large brown eyes that looked wide open and honest.
Come in. Come in, Mr. Dollar. Thank you very much for coming over. I was surprised when Mrs. Kennedy called me about this matter today. Surprised to learn that you were in town.
Were you?
She said you'd been over to her home this morning.
That's right.
Well, just what is this all about?
We have reason to believe Mrs. Kennedy is a party to an attempted fraud, Mr. Franks.
I gathered it was something like that. I've been writing policies for Worldwide Insurance for 17 years, Mr. Dollar. And this is the first time anything like this has ever happened on one of them.
I believe you, Mr. Franks, and your record. But there's a first time for everything.
Yes,
I'm here to find out all I can about the circumstances under which you sold the policy to Mrs. Kennedy's brother.
Nothing unusual about it, Mr. Dollar.
I think there was.
Eh?
James Lansing was a bachelor. He lived in a fairly nice apartment on the other side of town. No dependents. Now, what made James Lansing a prospect for life insurance, Mr. Franks?
Well, it's more of a personal thing, really, I suppose. My wife and I were interested in buying a home a couple of years ago. It was one we liked in Catalina Vista. The real estate agent happened to be James Lansing. That's how we first became acquainted.
Uh-huh.
Mrs. Franks and I saw Lansing, two or three times. Had dinner together, you know. And I managed to sell him the policy.
I understood he was an engineer.
He had been at one time in Los Angeles. And he was only engaged in the real estate business here for a very short time. Really a matter of a few months.
I see. Did he do very well at it?
I don't think so. I don't think he worked hard at it. You see, he had a fairly comfortable income from money left by his father.
You didn't buy the house from him?
No.
Too much?
No. Mrs. Franks died rather suddenly about that time, and I had no need to buy a home.
But out of the association, you interested Lansing in buying insurance from you?
Yes.
What kind of a man was he?
What do you mean?
Well, just your opinion, Mr. Franks.
Well, just a client, Mr. Dollar. I looked at him and treated him just the same as any other client.
But you saw him socially several times, had dinner with him. Do you do that with all your clients?
I might. I remember he was trying to sell me something, too.
Ah, sure. How'd he look?
What?
Pale, thin, emaciated, what?
Oh, he looked fine to me.
Did he drink much?
Well, I don't recall.
Think. It's important.
Well, I don't recall.
Then I'll recall for you, Mr. Franks. Lansing did drink a lot on those occasions. As a matter of fact, he was soaked up most of the time.
Oh, well, that's not true, Mr. Dollar.
You know as well as I do, he was an alcoholic in Los Angeles, and he was an alcoholic here in Tucson. He died of malnutrition, a direct result of his alcoholic condition.
Well, I'm not a doctor. I had no way of ascertaining that.
You don't have to be a doctor to smell booze, Mr. Franks. Did you ever meet his beneficiary?
You mean his sister, Mrs. Kennedy? No. I think I told you she telephoned me today.
Never met her at all?
No.
Mr. Franks, I'm going to leave you for a while, and I want you to think about all we've discussed. When I come back, I might ask you the same questions again. And I'll expect some different answers.
Anything you say, Mr. Dollar.
Hillary Franks, 17 years insurance broker, was a bad liar. He was worse than that. He was a stupid, awkward, unprepared liar with no idea of what he was up against. He knew I was going to get him and get him good. And he didn't know what to do about it. I almost felt sorry for him.
There'll be another intriguing episode of the Lansing Fraud tomorrow.
Tomorrow, a bad liar turns into a pretty good gunman. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure and join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, Roy Rowan speaking.
That music, very dramatic music there on Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
That goes right along with you, Carl.
Yeah, I'm very dramatic.
Yes, you are.
You know, that music is from the CBS music library. And the reason why I know this is because that music was used on many, many radio shows on CBS. Now, there are certain shows on CBS that did not have the live orchestra. You know, a lot of shows did. But the shows that were trying to save a little money, like Johnny Dollar and some of the detective shows, they didn't have a live orchestra. Now, I believe that Sam Spade did, Philip Marlowe did, because these were like the real expensive shows on CBS. But CBS had this vast recorded music library, okay? And that song that we just heard was one of them in the library. And the reason why I know this is because when I produced the Twilight Zone radio dramas back from 2001 until just recently, when I was directing those and producing those shows, CBS owns the Twilight Zone. So I licensed the rights to turn the Twilight Zone television show into a radio drama series, hired Stacey Keach to be the host, and CBS provided me with their entire music library from these days. Yeah. And it had all of the and by the way, the Twilight Zone television shows used that library as well. A lot of it was original, but they used this library. So many of the themes and songs that I used for the Twilight Zone came from this library, and that particular Johnny Dollar song was also in that library. But I tell you, the library was you know, hundreds and hundreds of hours of music, and we would go through it and find music that would fit the scene for the Twilight Zone. A lot of work, Lisa.
It was a lot of fun, actually.
Were you ever in any Twilight Zones? I know you auditioned for one.
I was.
And I know you were in some of the Dread Time Stories radio shows we did.
And I was in Twilight Zone.
You were also in some Twilight Zones.
I was.
Wow.
Yeah. Toward the end of your Twilight Zone.
How did you manage
to
do that?
I don't know. I just kind of squeaked
in. Did you know someone or something like
that? I did. Actually, I did.